flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan, live from New Orleans, where we've had an outstanding trip that is winding down. We're flying back tonight. We're at Brennan's in the French Quarter for the stretch run of our show, taking you up to 6:30.
As Washington continues to build the foundation of success on and off the field this season, it's time for you to plan for your future as well. As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Condori and Morad can help you update your last will and testament or set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to tell them that Grant and Danny sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
It is time for our Beltway Blitz on Grant and Danny, which we will begin on the ice. We'll get to the NFL and the Commanders on a victory Monday, but how about the Caps? They've won 10 in a row on the road. They're closing in on an NHL record. With more on that, let's bring on John Walton, the voice of the Capitals. You'll hear him on the Fan tonight. We've got an 8 o'clock puck drop local against the Dallas Stars. John, how about this team on the road?
They've been really good, and coming into Dallas is certainly going to be a big test for them tonight. Dallas has only lost two games at American Airlines Center all season, so in talking with Spencer Carberry this morning, kind of make a noise about how this feels like the Toronto game from a couple weeks ago, where the Leafs barely ever lose at home, and you're going up against a fast-gaining team with a lot of offensive weapons, and they found a way that night. So hoping for more here the same before we head to Chicago tomorrow, but you got to go all the way back to the 8th of November, the last time that they lost a game on the road. So hopefully they can keep that going here tonight, and first place in the Metropolitan Division, first place overall in the Eastern Conference as they get going here tonight.
Yeah, ho-hum, because nothing special, right? Just have been unbelievable, as you said, to this point. John, give me a state of the union on the power play. Middle of the pack in terms of percentage overall for the season, but I feel like it doesn't tell the whole story.
Yeah, it's been a lot better. I mean, starting in the first month of the season where they were last or close to it, now 13th in the league. They're fourth in the league on the road, too. That's one of the reasons why they've done so well away in this last 10-game stretch and winning is they're scoring on the power play, even without Alex Ovechkin, at nearly 30%. So that'll win you a lot of games, and we've certainly seen a lot of that of late. The 5-on-5 scoring has dried up a little bit, and Coach was talking a little bit about that this morning, that, you know, the process is fine. It's just staying the course, and sometimes pucks just go in through the course of an 82-game season. But don't change anything there. And the power play's had a lot more movement to it in the absence of Alex Ovechkin. It's been kind of fun watching Carlson and Chychrun play together on power play one. We're days away, I think, from seeing Alex Ovechkin return, and when we do, that's going to change. But kind of an interesting look maybe for the future here if Chychrun hangs around for the long term and ends up signing with a team after this year. And those two together have been a lot of fun to watch.
You just said days away from Ovi. Give us more detail. How many days?
It's a good question. I mean, he's on the trip, so he skated with a team here in Dallas this morning, and he's still in the no-contact jersey. Spencer Carberry said today, next step in the process is going to be skating with the team full go, full contact. Now, that's not going to happen tomorrow because we're in Chicago and we won't have a morning skate. But as soon as Friday, maybe we see that. So now you're getting into next week. The Caps are going to start 3 games in 4 nights on Friday. That'll take us up to the 3-day Christmas break. I don't know if we see him before then, but I would bet a mortgage payment we're going to see him before December's over. And I think with a game in Toronto coming out of the break, the big fella loves playing in Toronto, and I can't see him not playing in that game. So I think you get a few days, at least, at the very least, I think you see him right after Christmas. And I wouldn't rule out seeing him maybe even before in this little 3-4 stretch that's going to start Friday at home against Carolina.
All right, preview this one tonight. We talked about it a little bit here, but Dallas is pretty darn good.
They are. They're not scoring a lot of goals right now, but they are dominant on home ice. They have lost 3 home games all year, and one of those was a, air quotes, home game that they played in Finland. So they have only lost in this building twice. Jake Ottinger is going to be in goal tonight for them. He's 11-1 in this building this year, but funny enough, he and Charlie Lindgren essentially grew up together. Charlie's younger brother, Ryan, who plays for the Rangers, they're the best of buds. They're the same age, and they grew up together in Lakeville, Minnesota. Charlie trains with them in the offseason, and they're going to go head-to-head tonight. So both of them were talking about it. I know Jake's going to be fired up for it. We talked to him a little this morning in the Dallas room. And Charlie, we've got a lot of sound from both of them coming up on the game broadcast tonight. It should be a fun one from that standpoint. They're very good, but so are the Caps. And right now, maybe best on best going at it here in Big D tonight.
John, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
All right. Safe travels, fellas.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, sir. We will be in our studios back in D.C. for our 2 o'clock show tomorrow. All right, let's keep the blitz moving, talk football. Mike Jones of The Athletic. Couple of games relevant to Washington being played in the National Football League yesterday. We will start with the Sunday night football game. The Packers destroyed the Seahawks. I know Geno Smith got hurt, but I don't think that's a very good excuse. I mean, Seattle was already really struggling. Green Bay looks like they're in a good place, Mike. I think that this is a team that's going to be a tough out in the playoffs.
No, I think they are, you know, and that's the thing that we're waiting to see. When was the Jordan Love that we saw down the stretch of last year, the one that earned himself that big contract? When was he going to show up? And I think that he has never been quite right since injuring that knee early in the season, and now looks like he's healthy. They got things going. They were clicking their run game as well. This is definitely, I don't think, you know, obviously they're not going to catch Detroit for that divisional lead, but they're definitely a team that you're not really going to want to see once you get into the playoffs, because it's all about momentum, and they seem like they are putting it together.
Mike, last year when there was discord in Philadelphia, they fell apart. They lost a whole bunch of games in a row, got blown out of their playoff game, led to a bunch of changes. Now when there's discord, ho-hum, they beat one of the best teams in the NFL handily. They were decidedly better than Pittsburgh. Now they're 12-2. They got a great chance to have home field throughout, maybe get a bye. Depends on what happens with Detroit and all these injuries. But hard not to be impressed with what Philadelphia's doing.
No, you know, and that's the thing, you know, they, like you said, they learned from last year's problems. A.J. Brown even said so, that, look, they were 10-2 last year and everything fell apart. And that's part of the reason why he spoke up last week saying that they needed to work on their pass game, because he didn't want them to get to the crunch time of the season and not have addressed this. And so after he called them out, after Brandon Graham kind of, you know, spilled the tea about some frictions between Brown and Hurts, rather than just kind of pointing fingers and then retreating to their corners, they all dug in, they worked extra hard in their meeting rooms, on the practice field, and got things right, worked on their timing, worked on execution and precision, and you saw the result yesterday. So right now they look like the best team in the NFC. It's unfortunate for Detroit because of all these injuries, but the Eagles might be building and gearing up for another march towards the Super Bowl.
Mike Jones of The Athletic with us on Grant and Danny, looking back at yesterday's action around the NFL. Danny mentioned the Lions. They had a damaging loss to Buffalo, 48-42. Game was not that close. They were down 10 to 14 points pretty much throughout the entire game. I think at one point even a 17-point deficit, and they were playing from behind. They put up some gaudy offensive numbers trying to come back, but they suffered a ton of injuries. I mean, how big of a setback was yesterday for the Lions' chances to win the Super Bowl?
No, I think it was very big. And look, we saw some of those defensive struggles last week against the Packers. They really had trouble stopping them. And then it got even worse yesterday. And like you said, the injuries, they were holding it together. It was impressive that their defensive front was still as effective as they were, having lost Aiden Hutchinson. But the injuries have now continued to mount. And I don't know. This might be a situation where this lead of the NFC slips away from them. And it's amazing. They were looking like the best team in the conference and, you know, the favorite to make it to the Super Bowl out of the NFC. And now, because of all the injuries, they might wind up losing that conference and having to go on the road, play somewhere like Tampa, in the playoffs. And it's unfortunate for them because it's a great story. But injuries, you know, they have a way of catching teams at the wrong time, and that really derails things, and that looks like what could happen with Detroit.
Is Mike McCarthy saving his gig with Dallas playing their best football of the year?
It'd be the dumbest thing in the world to bring him back, but he very well probably is. You know, they've won three of their last four. You know, it's fool's gold, though. We've seen this movie. If they bring everybody back, which is just the Jerry Jones thing to do because he's loyal and he wants to make sure he has a coach that is still going to be somebody that he can control. So he very well will probably bring back Mike McCarthy, even though they badly need a change, not just the head coach, just the whole approach. But, yeah, if you have the locker room that's playing hard for a guy and they're vocal saying they want him to come back, then the owner's probably going to listen and wind up doing that, even though we know what the ceiling with Mike McCarthy is for the Dallas Cowboys.
Mike Jones of The Athletic. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
All right, have a good one, guys.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, you got it. Let's localize the convo here. And we will do so with our guy, Michael Phillips, Odyssey in Richmond and the Richmonder. Michael, 1-point win over the Saints from 17-0, late third quarter, to winning because a 2-point conversion was not converted. How should we feel?
Well, you should also feel mad that the clock thing happened. I think, like, we're glossing over it because they won, but that's actually, like, an infuriating error. That's not a pass interference, roughing the passer kind of thing that we get at about every week. That's, like, basic football mechanics. So I don't think we should gloss over that. It was a weird game. It was a low-possession game, right? In the first half, there aren't a lot of moments where you point to them and, like, man, you know, they were really slumping in this stretch. There just weren't a lot of drives, period. I think you should feel good. They're at 9-5 for the first time in a while, and I don't think anybody should feel like this team's, you know, making plans for New Orleans again in February. They're clearly not, but they're ahead of the rebuilding schedule, and enjoy it.
So, I mean, to me, I hear your point, though, Michael, that the last play should never have happened. But kind of my counterpoint is a lot of things shouldn't have happened that happened yesterday. Like, the worst run defense in the sport shouldn't have shoved it on you like you had never used a running play before. I mean, to me, I don't feel – listen, I'm glad they won. They're 9-5. They're in a much better place than I ever could have anticipated. I'm happy about that. But it's hard to feel good after that performance for 60 minutes yesterday, even with the botching there at the end.
Yeah, give Tyler Biadasz all the money, man. That guy has an impact, right? We've seen it throughout the season when he goes out. It's a difference in the quality of pass protection they've got there, and you really saw it yesterday. And not to suggest anybody else wasn't at fault, but, man, the impact Biadasz has on this offense is just so big and so noticeable. He's essential personnel, and I think they miss Austin Ekeler too, obviously, and the different dynamic nature he brings with the running and the blocking and the receiving as well. It's hard to feel good about that win. I do think, you know, seeing Terry light it up the first game after Noah Brown is just a reminder that Terry's the man, and that easily could have been a 4-touchdown day for Terry. And so I love that performance from him. But on the whole, there's a lot of stuff to clean up, no doubt about it.
Dan Quinn said today, by the way, speaking of Tyler Biadasz, that they fully expect that he will be back to play against the Eagles. He was dealing with an illness that shouldn't keep him out beyond this game. What about the kicking situation? Zane Gonzalez almost went but didn't. If he's healthy, he'll kick against the Eagles. He had two misses for Greg Joseph, only one in the box score, because the first one happened after the final second ticked off in the third quarter, so they got a reprieve, which nobody talks about. But, oh, by the way, there's your 3 points that won you the game.
It was so weird because it wasn't a narrow miss either. Like, the clock expired and we were sitting there for like 5 seconds and nobody noticed, and then he kicked it anyway. And I don't know what would have happened if he had made it. I guess they also would have overturned. It was a very weirdly officiated game, Grant and Danny. It really was. We got a kicker situation. Look, you have to expect an NFL kicker these days to be able to convert from beyond 50. That's a job expectation. It was indoors. There were no elements. Snap was a little rough, but Tress got the job done. It was there. It was ready for him. I don't know. I think you keep looking. We played this game with Seibert. We're like, hey, he's so reliable from inside 50. Let's ignore that he can't make it from 50 plus. Like, I got higher expectations, man. An NFL kicker should be able to convert from beyond 50 with semi-regularity. I say keep looking.
What did you think of Marshon Lattimore's impact? Not a ton on the stat sheet, but it still felt like his presence was known.
I was fascinated by what they chose to do, which was essentially not play St. Juice. You know, we were talking about how will they shuffle everybody around? Do you move San Ristol inside? You know, what's it going to look like? And it looked like taking 25 out of the game. And then they put him in the game and he got a penalty, which is not going to make his case for playing time down the road. But just another data point that the Adam Peters team has no time for the leftovers. There are so few guys from the past regime who stand a chance of hanging around. And it certainly, I like St. Juice. I like the length. I like how you disrupt games. But the fact that they would toss him aside so casually without even trying to work him into the game plan, I learned something yesterday.
Michael Phillips, Odyssey in Richmond. Thank you, buddy. Much appreciated.
Yeah, all right, hope you guys had fun. We'll be back there for the Super Bowl, so I'll catch the second
one. We'll see you then. Yeah, absolutely.
I look forward to seeing you in Nollins at that point. By the way, thanks to Michael and all of our Blitzers. Great segment there. A lot of content for you on DC Sports, including the Caps. I just pulled up because I have, you know, rewatched the game, but he mentioned that it wasn't like the clock had just gone to zero. I guess I didn't pay close attention to that. He's not wrong. I mean, the clock is at zero before Greg Joseph is even set up in field goal range.
Uh-huh.
Nobody acknowledges it. Like, nobody on the field seems to care. You're not really even supposed to be able to get off, you know, a practice snap and kick. So the idea that the refs are all just standing there waiting. I'm watching this in real time here. 3 seconds, 2 seconds, 1 second. Quarter's over. Still no snap. Still no snap. Still no snap. Snap. Kick.
Yeah.
And, like, nobody did anything.
It's this completely unsophisticated process for this multi-billion-dollar entity. I'll just never get it.
But that's not the normal process. Like, they normally would blow the whistle and say the quarter's
over. Well, of course, yeah.
And Dan Quinn's pointing up at the clock saying, hey, the quarter was over. He knew right away. Now, if he would have made it, I bet Dan Quinn wouldn't have said that.
Yeah, no reason to bring it up, guys. It's fine.
But they get together, and they're like, you're right. And in the stadium, it was several seconds later that they come over the speaker to say that they get another opportunity. And Rizzi's livid. I mean, as he should be, the interim coach of the Saints, is going, are you kidding me? Why did he get to kick that then? Why would he have stopped it?
Everybody's got a case there.
Wow. Man, did that officiating crew have an absolutely abysmal day. Jay Gruden's coming up at the top of the hour in 40 minutes. We'll get his breakdown on the game. We have not given out any game balls in Gasser, so we'll do that next right here on Grant and Danny.
Another wild game. And so for us, come down and get one on the road, that's a big deal. And going in to have the time of possession, you know, that's when we play at our best, because now third downs are more manageable. And I thought emphasizing that, you know, coming out of our bye on both sides of the ball, or third down, that was going to be big. We knew we could find ways to improve upon that, and that was going to be big. I thought, you know, finishing the plus in the turnover margin, that's, you know, you've heard me talk about that. But in a game of missed opportunities, penalties and misplays, those can get frustrating, and lots to clean up onto those, and we will. But that's a little bit like of December and January football, where it does get hard. And so to go all the way down to the end, to the last play, you've heard me talk about the fight of the group, and that's one of the things I really admire about our team. We've been in a lot of close games, and so we're getting battle-hardened. It's not always, you know, comfortable to be in those spots, but being on the sideline right there at the end to go for it, that's why we do it. And so to come up with a win here on the road, that's a big deal, and take our next step.
That was Dan Quinn. Welcome back. We're Grant and Danny. The Commanders are a 9-win operation with 3 games to go. Still a chance for their first 11-win season since 91. By the way, I was just thinking about this. With Patrick Mahomes getting hurt, diagnosed with a high ankle sprain, I feel like he leads the league in, oh my God, did he just tear his ACL? Nope, it's an ankle. He's going to limp around, but he'll be fine.
And he'll still outrun people on 3rd and 6 in the most clutch moment of the game and escape.
His normal sprint looks like a guy with a high ankle sprain.
Yeah.
It's like a waddly, like lots of arms.
Yeah, come on, normal shuffle, my normal stride is like a little bit jacked up.
But he
likes to try off.
Has Gumby legs or something.
He's got something.
He gets folded up and bent up in the most precarious, weird, awful ways, and seemingly avoids serious injury just about every single time. But Carson Wentz came in for Patrick Mahomes for the Chiefs. So there is a legitimate chance that both Carson Wentz and Sam Howell start NFL games.
I love it.
This weekend for the Kansas City Chiefs and the Seattle Seahawks.
I think Heineke threw a pass this weekend, too, if I'm not mistaken.
For the Chargers?
I think.
Probably did, because either they were getting blown out or I do know Herbert was super banged up.
He was banged up.
He got tackled and was limping around, and the game changed in that moment. They were leading 17-13, and they were about in field goal range, and that drive died on the vine with his injury. And then shortly thereafter, they were down a lot.
Is Kyle Allen starting this weekend? We could just do a full gauntlet of journeyman Jags that have spent way too much time here playing in huge games down the stretch in December.
Maybe the Saints will call Alex Smith, get him out of the broadcast booth. RG3 will get a nod somewhere. Yeah, that'd be fun. Dan Quinn just spoke with the media. I want to go through some of the nuggets from his press conference today relating to yesterday's injuries. He did admit that Zach Ertz and Jeremy Chinn are in the concussion protocol. Now, this is not any information worth taking as gospel yet, but at least the early returns based on what some of the media saw yesterday, I think, and what I was told was that it seemed like Chinn was at least further along in feeling okay after the game than Ertz, who wasn't really a part of the locker room celebration.
Yeah, it's the thing that you just never know, right, is the scariness on the individual play. I don't know about you, but from where I was, something with Ertz's leg, he landed funny. That's what I thought it was. Like it kind of, you know, maybe landed on his knee and in a weird way, or maybe like his hip hit first or something that was like a bruise down there. Did not seem to me to be a concussion type play. Whereas the Chinn play live was so violent. It was Valdez-Scantling, I think, was the receiver. His head gets jacked back and then the top of his head slams into Chinn's chin. And I'm going, oh, my, the both guys are knocked out and concussed. That was such a scary moment. And, again, it's so funny. You never know what this guy – funny is not the right word, but it's just so unpredictable, I guess, is what you'd say. Yeah,
it was a odd play that you don't see.
Mm-hmm.
And that contact to his helmet clearly was a lot like a boxing match,
yeah,
where you just get punched in the face, mm-hmm, and dropped. Because he did. I mean, he was concussed and seemed to go to the ground. I don't know if he was unconscious or not, but – lifelessly, it was very scary in the stadium for a moment, and then he ultimately got up. But I'll give Ertz credit. The catch he made, and in the game, he ended up just 2 for 25. He had a 6-yard grab, which was key in moving the chains, as he's done all year long, getting open. And then a 19-yard catch and run. One of his better yak plays, Danny, of the season, yeah, at this point. And he caught the ball one-handed, kind of snared it, almost like he had, you know, stick him on the fingers or whatever. The ball.
It was his best play of the season, as far as I can remember.
It was one of them for sure.
I mean, that was something.
And then he rumbled after the catch all the way inside the 10, and of course, you know, gets hurt on the back end, 19-yard gain. But if he's unavailable moving forward, you will only have Terry among your top four pass catchers,
yep,
on the year, because Eckler's out with a concussion, Noah Brown's out with the kidney issue that he's dealing with, and now Zach Ertz is hurt as well. So that means you need more out of Zacchaeus and Diami and Jamison Crowder and, you know, B-Rob out of the backfield. Maybe even you'd have to involve, I know this is a crazy concept, but your second-round pick, Sinnott, and your third-round pick, McCaffrey.
Uh-huh.
But at the tight end position, Sinnott and Bates. And maybe Colson Yankoff, who is the third tight end on the roster, is on the practice squad, I think, mostly. He would get a chance, I would think, and those three guys would be active.
And Bates had a big catch in this one, too, by the way. It was, I think it went him to third down. Ran something really nice and smart, I thought. They had trips, receivers to one side, kind of cleared everybody out, and then, you know, brought Bates across the middle kind of on like a little bit of a delayed drag route or something, and Daniel said him. That was a big first down conversion.
4:14 to play in the game on that long drive where they had the Diami catch. That would have set up, you know, the putting the game on ice.
Uh-huh.
It was a 3rd and 3 from just across midfield at the New Orleans 47.
There you go.
Bates made a 6-yard catch. Now, he completely caught it and fell right to the ground.
Yeah, we, like, got guys that do that.
Protecting himself when there was no one around him. I mean, he could have gotten another 5 yards pretty easily. And if you break a tackle, maybe more than that, God forbid. But he caught it, and he just kind of literally went straight to the ground like, I am not going to fumble today. Because remember, he had the
yes,
fumble in a game recently.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the Dallas game, I think?
I think so, yeah.
But he did not want to do that again because he just said, I will give myself up and we will move the chains 1st and 10 from the 41 on what should have been, could have been, the final drive of the game. But I do think at tight end, maybe Sinnott, and we said all year long, Ertz is the guy. If he were hurt, Sinnott would get chances as a pass catcher. If Ertz does not play this week against Philly, you could have your first, you know, 4, 5, 6 catch Ben Sinnott game, maybe, where he takes over in the Ertz role.
Yeah, somebody's got to do it. I mean, they're different players, obviously. I mean, Sinnott athletically it's not even a competition between him and Ertz, but that's not all. You know, we're not winning a Mr. Universe competition or a fitness competition. Ertz has that smarts, that savvy, that know-how, that, you know, just that, you know, the knowledge base, any kind of coverage, instant recognition, always seems to be open, uses his body really well to make catches. Again, he's a catch-and-fall guy, but Sinnott has some of that juice. But, again, it's unfair to ask him to have the same depth and knowledge base as Zach Ertz has been doing this for a decade.
Dan Quinn on the kicking situation, Danny. He did say Zane Gonzalez was very close to playing, that there were some questions about the plant foot, so they just kept him out of the game. I bet you they didn't want to get burned again like they did with Seibert, where he said, yeah, I'm good to go, I swear, and then he clearly wasn't, and it screwed them in the game. So they went with Greg Joseph off the practice squad. But here's what's interesting. Quinn did say definitively that Zane Gonzalez will be their starting kicker if he's deemed healthy against the Eagles, meaning the Greg Joseph performance was a one-off. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe if he made the 54-yarder and hadn't missed any kicks, he missed two kicks that he tried to make yesterday,
right.
One of them in the box score. The other one didn't count. But had he had a better game, I don't know if it would have been different, but they're going right back to Zane Gonzalez. They're not going to go back to the kicking market, according to Dan Quinn. He also talked about Marshawn Lattimore. How do you try to grade his performance when nobody threw the ball toward him all game long? He said, quote, when you have less attention going to you, that's the sign that you had a really good game. I think there's some truth to that. I also think he just wasn't tested because you were playing bad quarterbacks and bad wide receivers. And if you were playing CeeDee Lamb or something, it'd be a different story. But they also know Marshawn Lattimore, and they probably said, there's a rookie on the other side who was drafted to play in the nickel, who's playing on the boundary. I'd rather throw it at him than the guy that goes to Pro Bowls.
Yeah, we're going
to
test the second backup safety after Chin left the game. We're going to test a whole bunch of people, Noah Igbinoghene, that it's not Marshawn Lattimore. So it kind of depends. I mean, if you're saying he had an impact, yes. Had a good game? I don't know. Maybe that's semantics, and maybe I probably shouldn't care about it. But it reminds you of this. Remember, you know, after some guys have been traded, and it was Juan Soto and the Misfit Toys in the lineup, and if you're the opposing manager, you're going, there's one guy that's not beating us. I might walk him four times. We had an impact on the game. He walked four times. Did he have a great game? I don't know. He didn't get to do very much other than trot down to first base and to get stranded there and hand his helmet and gloves to the first base coach, right? So Lattimore had an impact without a doubt. And that's, I'm excited about that, by the way. That's my biggest takeaway from the game is that, now it's not to say that no one will ever test him at any point in time. If I'm Philadelphia, I'll take my chances with anybody over there. I got a couple great receivers. Same with, Dallas and CeeDee Lamb or Drake London or whomever with some of these opponents coming up. But it's clear to see that that's the by far more respected, revered, let's avoid that guy, which again opens up a lot of possibilities for the defense.
Lastly, among Dan Quinn's comments today in his press conference, he had a great quote. I'm assuming he was asked about one of the calls or maybe the sequence at the end of the game where the refs completely botched and bungled how much time was left. He said, and this is way easier to say after you win, I will admit, than after you lose, right? It's easier to high road it when you won the football game. But he said, quote, a lot of people can, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this word or not. I've been in radio for 25 years. I never know what you're allowed to say. B-I-T, fill in the blank.
Big and rich.
Yeah, right. Because a lot of people can do that and complain about stuff. Rather than fight and find a way, there will be bad breaks and bad calls. That's life. You can be about it, or you can go get it done. And it's very Dan Quinn, like backwards hat, like, we're here to tangle. Who wants to tangle? But it's a great quote. Like, hey, we're not going to sit around and complain about what the refs did or didn't do. We had to find a way, and we found a way. Again, easier to say that after the two-point conversion doesn't work, but I still love that quote from him. I love that mindset and kind of that element of their culture of, we're not going to sit here and whine about what wasn't called.
100%. And I think you could do both things. Now, I'm with you. Had it gone against them, you could address that. And he would also, what he would say is, we need to be accountable ourselves, too. You don't lose that game because a call went against you. You lost the game because you couldn't run the ball against a bad run defense. They're in the game because X, Y, Z. We didn't hit this. We didn't hit that. We gave up too many sacks or, a million different things you didn't do against a struggling opponent, right? You're in that position. Now, once you find yourself there, hey, these things are inexcusable. I think you can spin both plates, but as a coach, it's that teachable opportunity, right? Where you're going, hey, at this level, there's going to be a time where adversity, a call goes against us that shouldn't. There's going to be a moment where it's obvious the replay tells us that one thing happened and they don't overturn it because who knows why. You're going to get screwed. And I know it's real close to this league, but, you know, own your own destiny. Handle your stuff. And they did just enough here to get out by the skin of their teeth.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Jay Gruden joins us in 20 minutes at 5 o'clock. We'll get his take on the Commanders' performance and hanging on for a big win. Also, we'll go around the NFL with him. What do we make of the defensive outing? They were so good early in the game, and then they had no answers in the fourth quarter. What went wrong there? We'll try to diagnose that next on G&D, live from New Orleans at Brennan's in the French Quarter.
It was your return to Louisiana, over 220 yards. You had a pair of touchdowns to Terry. What was it like to be here and be successful once again?
Feel great coming back to, you know, I consider my second home. Spent 2 years here, man. It was nothing but love. It was great to come back where my LSU career started here. So I decided to come out and leave with a win.
I love Jaden Daniels in interviews. Just so good and pleasant and easy kid to root for. And he's made it easier with his play this year. Another 25 of 31 passing, efficient day, two touchdowns, no interceptions, both to Terry McLaurin, by the way.
Absolutely. Could have been more as it goes, right?
Yeah, we talked about
one
that.
One wiped out just because of what should have been a pass interference penalty that easily could have been a touchdown.
Well, yes, it was a pass interference. It was also underthrown to create the pass interference. He was wide open, and the ball got underthrown. But, yeah, P.I., that should have been a 40-yard penalty. 52-yarder, 54-yarder, 60-plus yarder, all left on the field. And yet and still, you look back and you go, pretty darn good game.
Absolutely.
And I think Mason,
tight window throws, too, yeah.
How about the electric runs? Third and 17, 24-yarder. Mm-hmm. Fourth and one, one-yarder. There was another conversion. I think it was a third and short. Do you remember this? Where there was a defender that immediately got in the backfield. And Daniels completely juked him and then got the first down, like, reaching. They might have only needed a yard or two, but, like, falling forward and reaching, and he got it by, like, I don't know, a foot. Do you remember that? First half,
sure. Yeah, I think it was in the first half. I'm trying to remember exactly what the sequence was.
It was one of those special plays.
It wasn't like a huge gain, but it was like...
No, I think it was like one or two or three yards.
Should be tackled in the backfield, and he wasn't. And I remember the guy next to me, because I was on the end of our little group, Saints fan, just goes, my God, man. I don't know what you're supposed to do.
Right.
I'm
true.
Like, that's the thing. This is, I always refer to it as the thing. It's the thing that I've wanted my entire life is the taking the negative, what should be a blown up play, it should be devastating, it should be punt time, and having the opposing crowd just do the shrug with their hands up like Jordan at the All-Star game going, what are we supposed to do?
It's
I want them to experience that exasperation.
Three, four, five tops quarterbacks make that play.
Uh-huh.
Right? Where you're dead to rights in the pocket. Whoop. No, you're not anymore. You just made a guy miss.
Yeah, I think it was that third and two looking at it now on a drive they'd go on to score.
Third and two?
Third and two.
That's the one. And he got it by probably...
A foot, maybe?
Maybe a foot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought they were going to measure. They eventually just gave it to him, and they moved the chains. Just a beautiful play. But he had three of those on the ground for sure and was mostly pretty efficient and accurate throwing the football. A couple of the long shots to Terry notwithstanding. But... it was a great game for him, a win for him, back in New Orleans. By the way, I went down on the sideline before the game. You kind of hung out outside and didn't come in as early. But Ryan, myself, Darris, we ended up going down on the sideline pregame to just enjoy and take in the Superdome. And Dylan Cruz was down on the field. I posted a picture over on Instagram if you guys want to go check it out, at Grant H. Paulson. Bumped into him and had a nice conversation with him here in the middle of the Nats offseason. But Cruz... like Daniels, a number two overall pick out of LSU.
Uh-huh.
And him and Jaden did a jersey exchange. Told me he drove in from a little over an hour away to the Superdome. Comes to games occasionally. But was not going to miss seeing his former college buddy who was a star at LSU at the same time as him. And I love seeing their interaction.
Yeah, so neat, man. Because, you know, they're it's not exactly the same to be – frankly, the number two overall pick in baseball and sort of work your way through the minor league system. And otherwise, whereas you're already a built-in star at the highest level when you're the Heisman Trophy winner in college football. But there's a lot of shared experience there. There's a lot of similarity. There's a lot of, you know, you come from one place, you're taking over a brand new city, you're wildly popular among the fan base that's, you know, energized and looking for kind of a change in recent ways, right? You're looking for to be a catalyst for a new generation of folks where, like, you think about these guys when you think about the team, think about the organization, right? We did that that already. We did that one time where we built up with the Nationals, and some of those players will forever be etched in our memories and be iconic. Daniels is trying to kind of write his own chapter in that same way, and he and Cruz going through it together is pretty cool. That was a neat shot.
Quickly on the defense. I keep hearing people bashing the defense yesterday, and I will fully admit that the fourth quarter was problematic and not okay, right? You gave up a total of what could have been 13 points in one quarter on 9-7 and 11 play drives where you couldn't get a big stop or get off the field. You gave up 51, 59, 56 yards. So you're talking about like 160-plus yards in one quarter. I mean, on a pace for what would have been like a 600-yard game.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a terrible quarter. But they shut New Orleans out in the first half with drives of minus 4, 23, 6, minus 4, and 17. You can't play a better half than they did. The third quarter drive was the only one they had. They did give up 76 yards and a touchdown. But if you remember, 71 yards on that drive, 50 of them came on two plays with a trick play.
Uh-huh.
So I think there's a little bit of an asterisk there to say that was a bad drive. They also had what was a brutal 5-yard penalty there that moved the chains as well, or else maybe a drive ends. I think they had a bad quarter. I don't think they had a bad game. I mean, look at the numbers. Like time of possession, 19 minutes the Saints had the ball. They ended up getting 13 of their 19 points, basically, in the fourth quarter. I just can't do the defense was bad thing.
Sub 250 yards total for New Orleans. 3 out of 11 on third down. And she said 19 minutes time of possession. Sorry, this is the NFL. You know what I mean? Teams eventually find a way, spread you out, run, hurry up, do something.
Make more
one
plays.
Deep shot. Yeah, they.
You scored 20 points.
This
Make
to me,
more
yeah,
plays.
This to me is an offensive story. It drives me crazy. Like in a league built for offense, a defense allowing another team again to score whatever it is, 19 points, shut them out in the first half, multiple third downs are converted via penalty. One, by the way, on a scoring drive, 100% bogus. The Dante Fowler roughing the passer penalty. I'll take that performance from a defense every time, sight unseen. That's it to me. I mean, like, I understand you don't want to let them drive down the field that time.
Yeah.
Okay. If that was something that never happened in the NFL, like, it's a weekly basis that even a team that's not particularly good in that hurry-up mode, that desperation mode, nothing to play for, nothing to lose, is able to march down the field running kind of that hurry-up stuff. There's just something to that. That's okay. It's a drive does not a bad game make.
The last six Commanders drives in this game, they had 6 points on two field goals
mm-hmm.
with a missed field goal in there. But that was on their last six times they had the football. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Jay Gruden, former head coach in town. He coached here in New Orleans. We'll talk to him about yesterday's performance. Next, we are live at Brennan's in the French Quarter.